being on vacation, I kind of chilled, and I can go to a city where no one knows me, and I go to restaurants and I don't run into anybody that I know. And so it was kind of fun just to be Marty for a change and kind of hang out in Texas. When I got back, I had two speakers planned because I was supposed to be in Israel for those 2 weeks. But because of the war, they canceled my trip, so I couldn't go. So since I had two speakers, we went on vacation. So when I got back and still had another speaker lined up, Jeremy, lined up to speak for me, and then Pastor Alec, my wife decided that it was a good time for me to go through my closet. Have you done this? Yeah, and so she told me that that it was time that I came to terms with my T-shirts. You know, it's like, how many T-shirts does a man need? Yeah, more. Yeah, like one more, you know? Yeah, thank you. Praise God. All the men up here are speaking. Yeah, one more. You may change your mind here in a few minutes. So I looked at my T-shirts and so I'll start trying them on. Because I don't know about you, I keep my T-shirts. You know, I have a lot of surf shirts. I have concert shirts. And, you know, it's like, hey, I remember the ZZ Top concert when I got that shirt. Yeah, that's, I'm taking that with me, you know, I'm not getting rid of that one. But so I went through my shirts because they got holes in them. The necks were all stretched out. Some of them I got stuff splattered on them and stuff. But, you know, so it's time I went through the closet. Plus, I had another closet where they're all folded in there because I ran a room in my big closet. So it took me several hours to go through all my T-shirts. And it's an emotional thing for a man to part with a T-shirt. Because it's like, yeah, I remember Eddie Money concert, you know? Yeah, anyway. I actually got rid of Santana. Carlos Santana. The guy can play the guitar. Yeah, I remember Woodstock. I was alive. I didn't go, but I was alive. Man, the guy was all over the guitar at Woodstock. I mean, the guy can play the guitar. He has one of the best percussion departments of any team I have ever seen on the stage. The guy is just tight. So between him and Eric Clapton, man. But anyway, I had a Santana T-shirt. It took me some evaluation to actually part with it, because I remember the concert. You know what I mean? So I was getting rid of T-shirts. So I made some radical change, and pretty soon I had a pile. It was probably about this tall, and like a couple feet wide of T-shirts. And I still have a lot of T-shirts. And now that I've got rid of those, I got room for more. You know, and as I got to look, I was trying each one of them on, keep, don't keep, that kind of thing. And as I was trying them on, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I got to rationalize keeping some of these. And it's like, no, you need to get rid of that. You know, it doesn't look good. You know, it's falling apart, et cetera. But I realized as I was doing that now I came with T-shirts from California, and I've been here a long time now. Doesn't seem like a long time, but this year is the 18th year that I came here. Liz and I moved here. I brought T-shirts with me that I had had long before I moved here. So I've had some of these T-shirts over 20 years. Do you? Yes. So I have to make an observation. This is spiritual, what I'm going to talk about. It's totally spiritual. Aren't they made better? Those old ones? Thicker material, better cotton, better form-fitting, make you look more studly. You know what I'm saying? Now there's this big, boxy, extra-large, wow. You know, back then it shows the V, everything. Now it's like, serious? So it's not me, it's a T-shirt. But anyway, so as I was going through this process of getting rid of the old T-shirts, you know, and keeping the new ones and stuff like that, then I came to church and started working on my sermon. And God's like, there's something spiritual in this. Because in Colossians chapter 3, Paul is going to talk about, in verses 7 and 8, about taking off old clothing and putting on new clothing. I'm like, thank you very much. So today, if you walk out of here and you wonder, what is it I am supposed to do as a Christian? It's pretty simple. Are you listening? Yeah. Okay, so today is about cleaning your closet. Now, maybe that's the physical closet. You men need to come to terms with how many T-shirts you've got, okay? That's a whole nother thing. I'm talking about your spiritual closet. How many spiritual T-shirts are you wearing that you should not have on your body anymore? So today's about cleaning the closet. Because in chapter 3, which we talked about 3 weeks ago when I was here, the main motif is woven out really almost through the rest of the book. The main motif, main theme of the chapter is if you're a Christian, your Christian life should always be moving from what? My old life, my old sinful life, to my new life. And it's a constant struggle between the two, because the old life wants to pull you back and you want to live that way. And then you're like, I can't do that anymore. And you confess your sin and you move back over to the right life. And Paul's going to talk about that more in detail in verses 7 and 8. But he's going to switch metaphors, which you usually don't do that as a speaker. If you have a metaphor, you kind of stick with it. It's Paul. He's all over the map. So in the last five verses, verse 5 specifically, he's talking about put to death your old sinful nature, right? And then live according to the new nature that you have. Well, he's going to switch metaphors here from killing sin by the power of the Holy Spirit in your life to, well, a clothing term, taking off the old clothing, putting on new clothing. So I want you to be thinking about, do I have any old spiritual t-shirts of my old life in my lifestyle right now, how I live, that I need to take off today and put on t-shirts of holiness? And he's going to help us big time as he does this. So it's been a couple of weeks, so we need to review because brain cells die daily. So, right? So let's review. So what did he talk about in the opening verses? First of all, he's going to vacillate back and forth between identification and motivation. He's going to identify sin, and then he's going to get you motivated. That's why you need to do something about it. So he's going to identify the bad clothing in verse 6 that you need to deal with. Then he's going to identify, or in verse 5. Then in verse 6, he's going to tell you motivation as to why you should deal with your sin. So he says, you once walked this way, and let me explain to you what that type of sinful clothing was. Then in verse 6, he's going to give you some motivation of why you should deal with it. It's because God's going to judge you whether you do it or not. Heaven and hell is not in view. It's just you and the Lord at the bema seat of Christ, 1 Corinthians 3. He's going to judge the quality of your Christian walk. How well did you pursue after me? How well did you deal with sin in your life? So that's verse 6 where we left off when I was here last. He's going to go back to identifying sin. So if you came today to be uplifted, encouraged, etc., that's not today. I'm just telling you. Blame Paul, not me. I'm just the teacher telling you what Paul said. He's like an attorney vacillating back and forth to prove his point that you should get rid of the old clothing, put on the new clothing, by vacillating back and forth between the positive and the negative, and between identifying the negative to giving you motivation for dealing with it. So when you get to verse 7, he's going to switch gears again. And here he's going to say, in them, these old sins, you also, as a non-Christian, once walked in those things when you were living in them. So there's two ways to live the Christian life, according to the old life or according to the new life. So as a non-Christian, you just live the old life because that's all that you know. It doesn't mean you can't be noble and do just things, etc. But at your core, you're, according to what the scriptures teach, depraved. You love darkness and you will gravitate toward darkness. And that is just how you live. If you want to read about the life of a non-Christian, read Romans 3, and you can see yourself in action before you knew Christ. But once you become a Christian, now you have the power to not live that way anymore, not to put those old t-shirts on anymore, put them off, and put on a t-shirt that's holy. Yesterday I was at, not that we really wanted to do it, but we went to Costco. What in the world for? We actually talked about it going into the parking lot on Memorial Day weekend, like our family may never see us again, you know? And, you know, found a place to park the car. Everything went inside. There's a zillion baskets in the parking lot. Pick a basket. There could be 10,000 baskets in the parking lot. I picked the wrong one. Do you ever do this? Yes. And I'm a smart shopper now because I like to shop. But I, you know, picked a cart. Now I test them out. Because I don't want one like a squeaky wheel the whole time you're pushing it. Everybody's looking at you. Like, so embarrassing. And so I checked it out. Seemed good. Rolled in. Did my ID. Got in. Started shopping. Then it didn't take long to figure out, this thing pulls left. It needed a wheel alignment. And I'm not talking like kind of left. I'm talking hard left. So it was a physical gym workout, the entire shopping experience. And then once it's laden down with lots of goodies, and there's a lot of weight in there, and most of it was on the left side of the cart, it's really pulling left. I almost couldn't even get it out to the car. It kept pulling left. I was working to pull it straight the whole time. Finally, Liz had to grab the front of it and help guide it to the car. Thank God for a wife. And then I realized this is a spiritual thing. Because that's just like you were before you became a Christian, right? You're like a bent shopping cart. You might be able to go straight for a while, but given the opportunity, you're going left. And Paul says, you know, there's two ways you can walk. You can walk in holiness, or you can walk in unholiness as a Christian. So make a decision. Galatians 5, the word that he uses here in Colossians about walking, when he says you once walked this way, the Greek word is peripateo, means to walk. That's the word right there. Well, that's the command version. But that's the same word he uses in Galatians 5:16-25. This is the passage where he talks about the battle between the flesh and the spirit in your life as a Christian. And so he says by way of command, but he says, but I say to believers, walk by the Spirit. It's a command, not a suggestion. And you will not carry out the desire of the flesh, because the flesh is constantly telling you to do, live like your old self, put on the old t-shirt. Paul says, don't do that. Verse 17, for the flesh sets its desire against the Spirit and the Spirit against the flesh. Have you had this tug in your life? Yeah. He says, these are in opposition to one another so that you might not do the things that you please. Ever had that happen? God, today, I give you this day. I'm going to leave this whole day for you. You can count on me. How'd that go? And he probably blew it by noon. And you're like, what happened? Well, it's the flesh. Paul says, if you are led by the Spirit, you're not under the law. Now, the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are, because everybody's like, well, Paul, what is fleshly sinful activity? He says, okay, let me tell you. Immorality, that's the Greek word porneia, sexual sin. Impurity, another word for sexual sin. Sensuality, another word for sexual sin. Any manner of sex outside of marriage, perversion. He says, get away from that. Idolatry, sorcery, the Greek word pharmakia, sounds like pharmacy. It's the word for drugs. You have a problem with drugs? He says, don't do that anymore. That's a sign of the flesh. Enmity, strife, jealousy, outburst of anger. That would never happen here. Disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, drunkenness, carousing, things like these, of which I forewarn you, those who practice such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. But the contrast is, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, then that one that you pray for all the time, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness. Here's a good one. Self-control. Against such things there is no law, right? But he goes on to say, but the fruit of the Spirit are these things. Now, he says, to those who belong to Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. Yeah, that might be true, but then comes a conditional clause. Why? Well, he doesn't know if you're going to obey the command to walk right. So he says, if we live by the Spirit, because there's always a possibility you may choose not to, let us also walk by the Spirit. Now, what's interesting in the Greek text, you can't see it in the English text, when he uses that word to walk, which he uses in Colossians chapter 3, verse 7, that word to walk, the Christian life, he changes the word walking. Greek, you can't see it in English. Stoikomen is the word. This is a military term. So you can think back, if you're in the military, are you in the military? Many are. One. Were you in the military? You were? Or you are? Yeah. So did you go to boot camp? Mm-hmm. So when the drill instructor was training you to do, Ray, I know you were in the Marine Corps, right? Can I pick on you for a second? Absolutely. You can handle it? You sure? Yeah. So when you go to boot camp, where were you when you went?
Paris Island.
Paris Island, yeah. So when you went there, and he's teaching you how to march and stand in line and you know, get tight and with all that stuff. Is he giving you suggestions?
No.
No. And if he told you to get in line and you're like, sir, let me think about that. I'm a Christian. Let me pray about it. You know, how would that go for you?
Not well.
Not well. Yeah. So you just fell in line, right? Because he said you should, right? Yeah. Plus he was intimidating and probably what he looked like, right? Yeah. That's the word. So when Paul tells you walk according to the Spirit, not the flesh, get in line. He's telling you, this is not a suggestion. He's the DI telling you, fall in line on, well, using love in your life, peace in your life, joy, peace, long. He's saying, start living that way, not this way, but you have a choice. So how do you do that is the question. This is all introductory stuff to get to my sermon. So how do you do that? Three things to walk according to the Spirit, not the flesh. Confession, right? Yielding to the Spirit who's convicting you of your sin, and then seeking the Spirit's power to overcome said sin. Those three things. What were they? Confession, yielding to the Spirit, and then seeking the Spirit's power to overcome those things. And so Paul says, don't wear these old t-shirts. Get that off of you. Put on a good t-shirt, like love, joy, peace, etc. But he's going to get down into the old t-shirts big time in the text before us. He says, let me explain some of the old t-shirts you should not be wearing as a Christian. Verse 8. But now you also put aside all these. Paul? What do you want me to take off the t-shirt that's bad? First up is? It's in English. Can you see it? Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. We'll just stop right there. That's convicting enough just to read them. Now, it may mean nothing to you, but it's very important because that's the word but in Greek. It's the word de is but. It's a simple adversative. It's not a strong adversative. If it was, it would be the word Allah. But this is just a mild adversative. But the fact that it has this word nuni in front of it, nuni is the word now. And why would they put that word before the word but? And why don't they do that in the English text? I don't know. I wasn't the translator. But had I been the translator, I would have put nuni first because nuni is emphatic in Greek. So Paul says, by the way, as we're looking at clothing, you need to get off your body bad t-shirts to put on new spiritual t-shirts. Let me get your attention by putting nuni first in the sentence. What do you need to get rid of? Anger. Let's think about the first one that he uses is anger. What is the word? Well, the word is orge, is the word anger. Because he says get rid of anger. Then he says get rid of wrath. So what's the difference between anger and wrath? Because I thought anger and wrath kind of went together. No, they're two different kinds of anger. Orge anger is like a coal mine fire. So a coal mine fire, and I have a picture of a coal mine fire, is something that is underneath the surface of the ground in an old abandoned coal mine, and a lightning strike starts a fire in the forest, and that fire somehow catches the coal on fire underneath the ground through openings of the old coal mine, and that coal catches on fire, begins to burn, and then vents that are natural from fractures in the land use that superheated air to suck it up eventually and bring the fire to the surface and scorch everything in the area where it was all of a sudden. I mean, you're walking through the forest and it's looking fantastic, and then all of a sudden you see smoke coming out like in plumes like this, and then all of a sudden there's a fire. Like, where did that come from? Coal mine fire burns for years. When Paul says get rid of anger or gay, he's talking about that kind of anger is a brooding anger that's in your life for years. So you have a brother, you don't get along, you fought as brothers, you fought as young men, you just kind of don't get along. You don't like him, he doesn't like you, and then your parents died and left you an estate, and your brother got an attorney and somehow finagled things to where you didn't get all the inheritance he did. How'd that go over with you? Not well. You have orge. You have anger. You're righteously angry. But you don't deal with it. So it goes underground for a while. So for years, your animosity toward your brother is brooding under the ground. And then you have a family function, say 10 years after the fact. And then all of a sudden he says something, some word, some phrase, something that he says that just kind of ticks you off, and all of a sudden those fractures in your relationship become like those fractures in a coal fire, and out comes the fire and burns everything around you and your brother as you verbally just torch him. That's orge, that kind of answer. It's a brooding anger. You have that? Paul says, if you have that on your body as an old t-shirt, time to take that off your body because it's going to destroy relationships. Two, he says, get rid of thumos, anger, wrath. Thumos. Now, thumos is the kind of anger that just explodes all of a sudden. It's like, where did that come from? It just happened. Aaron Boone, manager of the Yankees. Sorry, I have to give you a real life example. Because I played baseball, I've seen lots of coaches go crazy on calls. And they can be in a dugout and just on the, I've seen them with their fingers around the chain link fence, shaking it and screaming at the umpire. But it's kind of bad news when the coach leaves the dugout and runs onto the field. Not a really good sign. And so there was a call the other day when they were playing on May 19th, as it were, the Toronto Blue Jays. There was a play, line drive hit to the second baseman, runners on first, runners going to second, line drives hit, the second baseman, you know, dives for the ball. From the coach's vantage point, he thought the ball was trapped. Now, if you don't know baseball, what does that mean? He didn't catch it. Ball hit the ground, popped up in his mitt, looked like he caught it, but he didn't, so it wasn't an out. So the second guy running to second is safe, right? But the ball was caught. So the umpire called it as a ball that was caught. I watched the play in slow motion. I'm of the opinion he caught the ball. So the coach was not happy with a call prior in the game, is upset about that. And then the second one was too much for him. He's got to run out and have words with the umpire face to face. They were not happy with each other. He's yelling, he's screaming, etc. And I read all of his defense of how he blew up. I read it, I'm like, that is so lame. That's thumos. You ever done this? Nobody has done this. You just blew up and you're like, what in the world? Maybe in your car, another driver, and you become like a wild screaming monkey inside your car. What is their problem? It's ridiculous. I'm going to pull in front of them. I'm going to slam on my brakes. I'm going to roll down my window. I'm going to yell at them. Something. You ever done this? Or you, the thought crossed your mind, if I just had missiles attached to my front end, you thought this? I have. Yeah, it's carnal thinking. It's thumos. Paul says, don't have orge, brooding anger, and definitely don't have thumos. So think about it on a practical scale. And when you look at your life, are your children afraid of you as the father? Are they afraid of you? I mean, because you are explosive. And well, I don't know what's going to set them off, man, but you know, I ain't telling them about this. Is your wife afraid of you? Are you afraid of your wife? Because they're explosive. That's thumos. Did I miss something funny? Or did I say something funny and I didn't know it? Okay, you just stay on your own sermon, whatever it is that you're doing. But you know how thumos works. It's like you're walking on eggshells. This person, I don't know what's going to trigger him. Paul says you need to deal with that. That's an old t-shirt needs to be put down and put on a new t-shirt. It's all about love and peace and tranquility. He said, let me add another one, malice. Malice. Kakios is the word in Greek, or kakion, and here in the adversative, how it's put into the sentence. But malice, what is malice? Merriam-Webster dictionary gets close to the Greek when it defines it this way. It says, this is deliberate intention to cause another person harm, injury, or suffering. That you're going to hurt them somehow. It's characterized by ill will, spite, or a conscious wrongful disregard of their rights and their safety. You're going to verbally do something. You're going to physically do something. You're going to get back at them. So think about Joseph's brothers when he tells them the great dream that he has and God's really going to bless him above them. How'd that go over with them? Not well. They have a whole lot of malice toward their brother, so they eventually concoct a plan to get rid of him. When you think about Jezebel, the wife of King Ahab, she covets Naboth's vineyard in 1 Kings 21. She wants what that man has, and she has a lot of malice toward him to the point where she can set up events to get him killed. It's a malicious activity. Paul says, do not be a malicious person at all. Think about your neighbors. Their kids are always having wild parties out on their back deck. You and your wife can't even sit and enjoy a meal outside on your back deck. So the next time that mom and dad have a party without the kids and it's quiet over there, you bring out the biggest speakers you could possibly have and aim them at their house and turn on the best heavy metal music that you've got. Is that Christian behavior? No, that's malicious behavior. It's malicious. And so Paul says, don't do that. It's malicious. I would tend to think that malicious behavior, if it was removed from the DC environment, that politics would stop. It's unbelievable how malicious people can be. Tulsi Gabbard, you know who she is? Director of National Intelligence. Whether you like her or don't like her, she's a woman, right? She's a human being. What'd she find out? Her husband Abraham has bone cancer. Terrible kind of cancer. So she has now stepped down. I read her letter this morning when I was eating breakfast. And I read her letter this morning. She's stepping down as a director of the National Intelligence. That's sad. But that's what she's doing. And already people are piling on her in a negative way because I read all of the messages that are posted online about her. And I'm reading this going, it's the sermon in action. Malicious speaking. I would just submit to you, may God drive that from our country and from us. It starts with us because Paul says this starts with Christians. To not be malicious. Fourth one he says is slander. Slander. I'll give you the Greek word and you'll know what I mean. The Greek word, as you can see as it's highlighted there, is blasphemion. Sound familiar? Sounds like blasphemy. And you're exactly right. That is what the term is. It denotes speech that denigrates a person, defames them, reviles them, disrespects them, etc. It's just slanderous speech. The Pharisees did this with Jesus all the time. When you cannot handle a person's argument, Well, the next thing's blasphemeo. It's ad hominem attacks against them to discredit them. What did they call Jesus? A whole bunch of names. They called him, you're of Beelzebub, Matthew 12. Translated, you do your miracles by the power of Satan. They called him a glutton and a drunkard, Matthew 11, 19. John 10, 20, they said, you're possessed by a demon. John 7, 12, they said, you are a seducer and a deceiver. Luke 7, 34, they said, you are a friend of tax collectors and sinners. John 8, 41, they said, you are born of fornication. Like your parents weren't married when they had you, that type of thing. Constantly denigrating him. This is all blasphemeo. This is all malicious, angry, hurtful speaking. Paul says, don't talk like that to hurt people. Use speech that edifies, that builds up, that's full of love and compassion and peace. Be that kind of person. That's a t-shirt that needs to be taken off. Is that you as a Christian? Because as a Christian, you can wear that t-shirt, blasphemeo. Don't wear it. And then he says, let me cover another thing of speech. He says, you need to put aside abusive speech. Now, when I was in high school, trying to grow up as a Christian, I will confess to you that I had what you might call today a potty mouth. You know what that is? Okay, I want to explain it to you. It's a Greek word, pateo. No, I'm just kidding. yeah. And you know, and it, when you develop a mouth with foul language, because I used it in sports. It was really great to intimidate your opponent, whether you're wrestling, playing baseball. F-bombs work great, all kinds of words. I know all the stuff. I used to use it all the time. Not a good look, especially if you're the only Christian on the baseball team. Been there, done that one. And the minute you start down that road, it's easier to do it because the Spirit comes along and convicts you of your mouth and you feel the sting of the Spirit convicting you of what you said, and then you confess it, but then you do it again. And you keep doing it and pretty soon you don't hear the Spirit because you're so calloused from your sin, that's just what you do. So I speak of one with experience with abusive speech when I was younger. And I finally had to get to the point where I had to say, Lord, I need to do three things. Confess. What was the second one? Yield to the Spirit telling me it's a sin. And three, you got to help me. And I will just tell you right out, don't think you're going to get definitive help immediately. I mean, like victory immediately. You might, but ingrained sin sometimes takes a while. So it took a while where I didn't speak like that anymore because it just kind of comes natural. But Paul says, get rid of abusive speech. So as a high school student, because I was using my mouth in the wrong way when I wasn't at church, so everybody... One little lady came up to me, her name was Mrs. Reynolds, came up to me one day after church and she said, you are going to make some woman a really nice husband one day. It's such a godly young man. And I thought, you should have seen me Friday night and heard me Friday night. I mean, you wouldn't be saying that right now. So Paul says, don't use this type of speech. Is that you? Then if it is you, recognize it, sin, yield to the Spirit, and ask for God for help and he'll help you. He helped me. You know what I mean? Not long ago, politicians didn't use abusive speech in public. Now they do. It's a terrible thing to watch. Used to, people feared law enforcement, and they'd be very careful what they said to them. My dad was a federal agent. I grew up watching him in action, and people spoke to him respectfully as a federal agent. But now they don't. And it hurts me every time I see it. I was like, my dad would cry if he could see how they talk to a federal agent today. It's just, there's so much that needs to change. But Paul says it must start first with the believer. May we not be involved in abusive speech. And then he adds in one more thing. Verse 9. Don't lie to one another. He's talking to Christians. Don't lie to one another. Now, do you see this first? See that right there? You see that? Okay, so that's a negative. It's the word may. It's the negative. This word here is the command to lie. And because that command is a present tense command preceded by a negative, may, he's saying this is an action in progress. Because there's two ways to say no in Greek based on the grammar. Don't begin to think about this or stop doing this. Because it's a negative followed by a present tense command, he says stop doing this. Who's he talking to? Christians. What are they doing? They're lying to each other. So do Christians lie to each other? Unfortunately, they do. And why do Christians lie to each other? Well, for the same reason that non-Christians lie to each other. Why do they lie to each other? What would you say? Pride. Is that it? That's probably the core of it all. Why do non-Christians lie to each other? Have you studied lying? Avoid conflict. Yeah, you hear somebody do something, you see them do something great, but you know it wasn't that great, and they ask you, how'd I do? What do you tell them? It was terrible, absolutely terrible. Now you tell a white lie. That was a fantastic, best I've ever heard. That's a lie. You don't want to hurt their feelings. Avoid punishment. Get ahead of others. Stretch information so you look better than you really do. Maintain your social place. Blah, blah, blah. They lie. And so it comes natural because Satan's the father of lies. So it's an old t-shirt you shouldn't have on anymore. So Paul says, if you're wearing this t-shirt, stop wearing this. Don't lie anymore. What's the opposite of lying? Telling the truth. When my roommate in college came to me, Brent Fletcher, came to me. His dad had the largest boat dealership in L.A. And he's like, hey, you want to sell boats? I'm like, dude, I don't know anything about boats. He goes, you make good commission. You like to talk to people. You'd be a great salesman. My dad would love to hire you. And he said, I'll give you all the books, learn all the specs on the boats, and you can go sell boats, and it'd be fantastic. So I did. So I, who had never driven a boat, still haven't, studied all the boats that we sold, deep sea boats, lake boats. I studied all the specs. I can memorize stuff. So I studied all the engines and everything, how they were constructed, et cetera, and I began to sell boats. Well, this is the largest boat dealership in Los Angeles. So what I learned quickly is the other guys that were selling with me didn't always tell the truth. They lie about the boats. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. And so I started telling the truth about the boats. And outside, out the back, one of the side doors were all the used boats. No one wanted to sell those because the commission wasn't that great. So I thought, I'm going to start selling used boats because I need money as a college student. So I started taking people out there, and I started selling all the used boats by telling the people the truth. Son, do you think this thing afloat? Not really. Okay, moving to the next one. Now, what about that engine? You think that's good? Well, let me give you the specs on that engine, you know? So one of the boats had aluminum specs built into the surface of the boat, you know? You think this boat's always going to look like this? No, sir, it's not. That aluminum is going to heat up on Lake Havasu, and it's going to eventually come up to the surface and just dull out the whole boat. I personally wouldn't buy this boat. Thank you. Tell the truth. I benefited because it helped pay for my college education because I told the truth. Telling the truth is always the way to go. So Paul says, take off that garment and tell the truth. And then he gives you motivation for doing it. What's the motivation? It's pretty simple. He says, you've put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. And this renewal is in which there is no distinction between a Greek and a Jew, a circumcised and an uncircumcised, a barbarian, a Scythian, a slave, or a freeman. But Christ is all and in all. What did he just say? He said, let me give you two levels of motivation to take off the old t-shirt. What's the first one? Well, that when you take off that old garment, as you're looking at Jesus, man, Jesus, he wouldn't act like this. I study Jesus and I take off that t-shirt. Well, then I began to look like Jesus. And that's what people need to see in your life is Jesus. So he said, let me motivate you. Look like Jesus. Number two, he says, when you take off that old t-shirt and put on a new t-shirt, the opposite of the ones he mentioned, you put it on, all of a sudden, all the barriers are removed between you and other people because sin creates barriers. He says, if you put on a godly t-shirt and take off the godless t-shirt, all of a sudden, there's unity with all the people around you, unity in your family, unity with your wife, unity with your kids. Why? Because sin builds walls. Take off those old t-shirts. So today when you go home, I know you're probably cooking out, smoking something, grilling something. You have another job. It's called clean the closet. And all you need to do is say, Lord, show me my closet and show me the t-shirts they got to go. And then I need to take a threefold step to get rid of them. Confession. What's the second one? Yielding to the Spirit who's convicted me of my sin. Third, appealing for his strength to overcome said sin and put on that great t-shirt. And if you need to get rid of a couple t-shirts that are real t-shirts, go for it. It's freeing. Good to have you in worship today. Let me pray for you. God, thank you for the opportunity to look at the scriptures. They are so practical if we're honest, and they tell us exactly what we need to do. And so may we be bold enough to evaluate our spiritual clothing, remove those things that dishonor you, and to put on clothing that highly honors you and builds peace in the body of Christ and peace with others and also emulates Jesus to others. In Christ's name, amen.